I've been a natural connector my entire life. I think this is the best city to date on the planet. But what I learned from that account was that people hated dating in Dubai. And I kind of was shocked because I was like, the most interesting, dynamic, cool people I've ever met have been living in this city. So I decided to start a business from it.
Christiana Maxion, known as the Dubai Matchmaker, is the founder and CEO of Maxion, a matchmaking concierge service for ambitious professionals in Dubai and worldwide, boasting a 95% success rate with a global database of over 40,000.
Even in like my early 20s, I was known for the parties that I would throw, especially dinner parties, and I would sit people next to each other on purpose, whether that was for a business relationship, friendship, or a romantic relationship. See, I know you and I spoke offline for a second. There is no really like secret sauce to matchmaking. It's really about your network and how wide your web of people are. When I think about compatibility in terms of personality, you definitely don't want to put carbon copies of two people together. That never really works. It's more about like a yin to your yang. It's more about finding if you are a hothead or quick to temper, you have somebody who's more calm and calms you down, and that's a better match for you, or else it's going to be constant friction all the time. A lot of the clients that come to us seeking this type of service is clients that really are looking for that level of confidentiality, but it's really people who are founders or business owners who started their own business. Maybe they had their head down working for the past 10 years and they've built this kind of empire and they finally lift their head and they lack network. They don't have a network to actually go to or to date the right people.
Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, as you know, chaps, I'm extremely interested in the evolutionary psychology of sexual dynamics. I'm fascinated by the way that we have evolved over time as men and women to operate slightly different sexual competition systems, and how this manifests in the modern day, now that we are in our evolutionary mismatch, as it were. And in that regard, I'm very interested in the whole innovations in the world of the dating market. And I have a particular innovator in that regard with me today, and that is Christiana Maxion, the Dubai matchmaker. And her company is very interesting. Essentially, she finds dates for extremely wealthy men. It's like a 0.1% high value men. If they want to get not just a date, but a relationship, a match, then they go to her. And I find this very interesting, so I thought I'd have her on. So, Christiana, hello.
Hello, Ed, and thank you so much for having me. Are you ready to explore millionaire matchmaking?
I don't think I'm quite there yet, but let's. And also, I'm married. Let's explore. So I hear there's quite an interesting story as to how. How did you get into doing this millionaire matchmaking?
Well, I've been a natural connector my entire life, but I'll like try to break it down. So I started my career as an athlete, ended up studying finance, decided that finance wasn't for me. And because of all of my years as an athlete and coaching and working with children, I ended up in education. And I actually was teaching first grade and kindergarten in the South Bronx for 4 years. And then I fell in love with a boy. And this particular boy actually worked and lived in Abu Dhabi. And that's how I ended up moving from New York to the UAE in 2016. Started as a kindergarten teacher. The boy was part of like a top tier, what you mentioned before, like the top 1%. And I really got a taste and like look into that world. He and I decided to split, but I decided to stay in the UAE. I grew my career in education, became a national teacher trainer, published author, and a school leader. And then in 2020, when the world was put on pause for a bit, I had a lot of time on my hands. And I had started an Instagram account called Dating in Dubai, where I was documenting my experience dating as a Western expat in lockdown, post-lockdown. And yeah, it gained a lot of popularity. And I think this is the best city to date on the planet. But what I learned from that account was that people hated dating in Dubai. And I kind of was shocked because I was like, the most interesting, dynamic, cool people I've ever met have been living in this city. So I decided to start a business from it. And in a city where people outsource everything, like I can't remember the last time I cleaned my own house, cooked, I drove my own car, I said, why aren't people outsourcing their love life? And that's where the agency started. And here we are
today. Let's go back a bit. So how did you, as a primary school teacher in the Bronx, meet this very wealthy man?
We actually met on a night out. He was there on a business trip, and we just happened to be in the same place at the same time, and we just really hit it off.
And did you know he was a very wealthy man, or did you somehow intuit there was just things about him that you liked?
Maybe a bit intuitive.
So tell me about that then, because are you generally, before you got into doing this, were you generally quite good at matching people up and things like this?
Yes. So even in like my early 20s, I was known for the parties that I would throw, especially dinner parties. And I would sit people next to each other on purpose, whether that was for a business relationship, friendship, or a romantic relationship.
And so what kind of factors were you taking into account when you thought that these people would be good together, potentially as friends or indeed as romantic partners?
Yeah, I think the easy part is like business relationships. Like, okay, this person does this person does that. You can kind of figure that out to connect people. But you really just either have a knack for it or you don't. And in all honesty, I know you and I spoke offline for a second. There is no really like secret sauce to matchmaking. It's really about your network and how wide your web of people are.
But what were you taking into account? Let's say if you thought, this chap's single, this woman's single, I'll sit him next to her rather than somebody else. What kind of things were you taking into account?
The thing that matters when it comes to compatibility is alignment. Do you two have similar goals in your future and what you see for one another in similar timelines? And when I think about compatibility in terms of personality, you definitely don't want to put carbon copies of two people together. That never really works. It's more about like a yin to your yang.
Right. So you're saying that it's interesting because there's an episode of The Simpsons, which is quite famous, where he almost has an affair. Okay. And the woman with whom he almost has an affair is very similar to him. And this creates an intense bond between them, but wouldn't necessarily work as an economic unit. Whereas Marge is, of course, quite different from him. So is that the kind of thing you're thinking about?
Yeah, it's more like puzzle pieces, right? When you think about relationships that really work. And when I think about emotions, when you get into that part, it's about finding the emotional yin to your yang. For example, you can't really have two people together that are both, let's say, hotheads, like really quick to temper. It's more about finding if you are a hothead or quick to temper, you have somebody who's more calm and calms you down. And that's a better match for you, or else it's going to be constant friction all the time.
Okay. So you found you were quite good at doing that. Did people say to you, wow, Christiana, you're quite good at matching people up? You have positive feedback about it. Did you create any marriages or long-term relationships?
Oh my gosh, of course we have marriages. We have marriages. We have babies. It's so exciting.
No, I mean, in the past. I mean, before you started the business.
Oh, yeah. I mean, gosh, when back in my 20s, yeah, there's people who are married and in relationships still because of me. And that was like me not doing it for a business at all. It was just me like, hey, you two should meet each other. And then when we actually created the business, obviously, it was then more targeted and we had direct goals that we've been able to achieve.
Okay, so the situation is, I mean, I'm obviously I come from the UK and a lot of my audience come from the UK, and it's quite interesting. There are thousands of UK millionaires fleeing socialist Britain, socialist chaos, destroyed, dead Britain for Dubai. We have the biggest per capita exit of millionaires and the biggest absolute number exit of millionaires of any country. And they're going to Dubai. What is this? I know. I understand that you operate. What is it? Is it five? How many clients a year? You do a small number of clients a year.
Yeah. So me personally, to work with me, I only work with two clients per quarter. But we have a whole team. So we're 10 matchmakers stationed around the entire world, from Vancouver to New York to Dubai to Melbourne. But the way that we run the agency is I basically run the Middle East and UK and Europe.
Right, so it's 18 people a year.
So each matchmaker has a different limit on how many they take on, because you have to remember, too, that I have a separate team that works here in Dubai. So if you want to work with me directly, that membership starts at $100,000. But then we have other matchmakers in our team here in Dubai who start at $30,000.
Per what? Per quarter or per year?
Per quarter.
So it's an enormous, it's a very substantial amount of money. That's 400,000, that's almost $500,000 a year.
Well, we usually work with clients on a quarterly basis because we get it done. Like, our clients aren't paying for options, they're paying for outcomes.
Mm-hmm. And then, as I understand it, any woman can sign up to be on the list.
Yeah, I mean, anybody can join the database, male, female, other. It doesn't guarantee you a date. Only our premium paying clients are guaranteed dates.
Right. Okay. So what would you say is, what are these about these chaps? I think it's quite an unusual thing to do. A, it's unusual to be that wealthy. But B, it's the fact it is. Definition, it's unusual to be at the left tail, at the right tail of the bell curve. But B, it's unusual to perhaps to want to do this. What are these men like? Do you have any impressions of the kind of psychology of them?
Yeah, for sure. So a lot of the clients that come to us seeking this type of service is clients that really are looking for that level of confidentiality, number one. But number two, it's really people who are founders, right? Founders or business owners who started their own business. Maybe they had their head down working for the past 10 years and they've built this kind of empire and they finally lift their head and they lack network. They don't have a network to actually go to or to date the right people, and or people who might be serial daters who feel like they're not being able to find the right fit for them. Like, maybe they keep running into, you know, the term gold digger or somebody who's after them for the wrong type of relationship. And they're sick and tired of transactional relationships and are actually seeking a true connection. And they know that the women who do join our database are women who are seeking an alternative as to what is currently on the market, right? With dating apps like Tinder that are just like swipe, 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 or have a bunch of sex workers on there. So these are women who are actually intelligent, who are beautiful, who have their heads on straight. And they know that the types of clients that we take on have similar goals and alignment to them as well.
Yeah, I mean, you were saying earlier that you met your ex-husband or whatever it was, your ex-partner at a party.
Yeah, right? I did actually. Yes. We met in a club essentially.
Right. So that's how normal people in the West, anyway. That's how they meet, through people at social events. At social events, yeah. Kind of liminoid, exactly. And therefore it's more socially acceptable to talk to random people, or at church. Or at university, or at a pub, or that's how you meet people, through people. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting that you, the matchmaker, of course, did not meet your chap through a online matchmaking app.
No, but
because that's how you just how I met my wife. That's how you meet people, through people. And I cannot understand. I find it very hard to get my head around the psychology of why people use these. Why don't they just go to the pub?
Well, this is it, right? They know, the people who hire us, they know that we have the network, that our web is very wide and that we can essentially find any partner that they're looking for. So we have the largest matchmaking database in the world with over 50,000 plus members. But beyond that, some of our clients come to us seeking a specific person. Like, we can even put you on dates with celebrities if that's what you're looking for too. I always say that I am 2 phone calls away from anybody on this planet. I can make anything happen for you. Now, it's up to you how the connection goes on the date, but we can definitely help you introduce yourself to somebody who we think would be really worthy of your love and vice versa.
Have you had that? Have you arranged a celebrity female date with chap?
Yep. Easy. That's the easy part, finding people. You know what the hard part is? Actually building a relationship. And that's what we're here for too. We walk you through that process as well. And the best part about hiring a matchmaker is that, yes, you get the introductions. We get to put you in front of these people. But then you also kind of have that liaison, that third party in between the two of you, who's like checking in on the relationship, finding out from person A, hey, how's it going with person B? And then you get to be in between to kind of like steer and make sure that the relationship is going down the right course. And also a third party who can basically help open your eyes to see, hey, is this the right relationship for you or is it not? Or maybe even help you with, like, let's say you have some friction in the relationship and help you figure out, is this the right relationship you want or is it not? So it's not only just the introductions, but then it's also the guidance afterwards that actually helps create those happy, healthy relationships.
So you're guiding people through how to negotiate relationships.
Yeah.
And is there an element to which these chaps, they are computer tech autistic sort of engineers that have problems with women or something?
Well, firstly, autism is a spectrum. Aren't we all somewhere on that spectrum?
By definition, not, because if we were all autistic, then the concept would be meaningless.
This is true. But I think that the clients who come to us, it depends, right? We have people who really want that hands-on experience, exactly like what I described, that really like walking you through relationships. And then we have clients who want that hands-off experience. Our client list ranges from politicians to tech founders who have exited to people who are extremely high profile. And also our clients range from extremely extroverted to extremely introverted. So we really have a range of clients that we deal with. But what we see trend wise is that a lot of the clients that come to us are business owners, founders who basically like don't have that network or really are looking for that curated, vetted experience where we're only introducing them to people who are vetted and verified.
So presumably I would imagine the key thing, the key problem, if you're Prince William or someone like that, Kate Middleton comes up to you and wants to go out with you, the key problem, the key thing that you want to eliminate is people that are only in it for your money.
100%, yes. And also, so a lot of the clients that we have that are very high profile, we don't reveal the identity until they actually go on the date. And all of the interviewing that we do beforehand, we have those specific questions that we ask in order to weed out the people who could be going in for just, a certain outcome from the
relationship. I would have thought that quite a lot of young women of a certain mental type might be interested in this for that exact reason. So how do you filter them out? By what process? What kind of question? How do you deal with them?
We have certain questions that we ask, Ed, and I can't say them online or else everybody's going to know how to answer them. But we have certain questions that we ask that are kind of like leading questions that basically give us the answers that we need in order to better fit them with our client.
In the earliest days of our nation, the herald was sounded for the elite men of England to decide the fate of our country. Such a gathering was known to our forefathers as the Witan. Now, in the ruins of our kingdom, the call has been sounded again. A new rising elite of steadfast men and women have a new Witan. This is the epicenter of the new British right. We shall hear from the heavyweights of our sphere: Carl Benjamin, Ed Dutton, Howard Cox, Nathan Hood, Nina Power, Catherine Blakelock, Josh Firm, and many more inspired speakers. This Witan will surely be generational. Buy your tickets now at shieldings.com.
But also keep in mind that a lot of wealthy men, they don't mind paying for things, right? It's not about that. What they need to know is that the person that they're with at their core, they're seeking connection and that it won't just be a transactional relationship.
But you said in another interview I saw with you that essentially all human relations are transactional.
They are, in the sense that you give and you take something. It wasn't necessarily had to do with money.
Can you expand on that? What do you mean by that? And how is that different? How does that differ from between men and women, that all human relations are transactional? Can you tell me a bit more about what you think, your thoughts on that? It's quite an interesting summary.
Definitely. So from that interview, that was just a clip that you saw, and that's like what goes viral, right?
I watched the whole thing.
Obviously,
I do my homework. I'm going to interview somebody. that was the thing that stuck in my mind, that aspect of it. So tell me, what do you mean by that, and how did you reach that conclusion? And tell me more about your thoughts on that. It's very interesting.
Definitely. So relationships are transactional, right? When you think about friendships, business relationships, romantic relationships, you're giving emotion, right? When we think about romantic relationships, there's a give and take of love. There's a give and take of listening. I give this, you get that. And that's what I meant by the whole transaction that happens in a relationship. And it doesn't necessarily have to come down to something that's like money or you put like a value on it when it comes to money. But guess what? Time is valuable. Emotional investment is valuable. There's also sex components that come in with that. So there's a lot of transaction when it comes to emotions and love in any kind of romantic relationship.
I suppose if you reduce it down to its essence in evolutionary psychology, in prehistory, you can say that a man wants sex, a woman wants investment, because only if she has investment will her offspring and her survive. And so the man, and so that is the exchange. The exchange is literally sex for resources.
Yes, that's definitely how it was before.
And I think now, we're still going to be evolved to that mindset.
It's interesting because I also speak about how there is a new kind of definition of providership where it's not just a man providing money for XYZ. It's more about what women are seeking, especially in 2025. They're seeking a man who provides an emotional space for them to be themselves, to be their authentic self, but also then to grow and evolve, to become better. So there's things that are more complex in 2025 because we live in the day of information and access to many different things. And I feel as a species, we are evolving more emotionally and understanding what we actually need from an emotional standpoint, not just a physical standpoint.
That's very interesting because on the one hand, you could say that, you know, we're going to have evolved modules as, you know, as basically advanced apes, to an advanced hunter gatherers, whereby the man is going to sexually select for youth and beauty, because it's a sign of fertility, and that's what he'll want to have sex with, and he will engage in some investment. So it's not like peacocks where he engages in no investment. And so therefore, he just wants to show off his genetic qualities to the woman by having a big tail. It's slightly more, he does do some sexual selecting. He wants youth and he wants beauty, and perhaps even some status. But the woman will want not youth. They literally select for age women because age is a proxy for socioeconomic status. But she will want resources to a greater extent and that sort of thing. But then in a context in which she has her own resources, which wouldn't have been historically, then obviously there's going to be some evolutionary plasticity to this. And so the fact she then has resources or a welfare state will slightly alter how she'll sexually select.
Her needs. Yeah, and also like what she's seeking in a partner. And it's quite interesting to talk about this because I actually had a client call the other day, and it's with a man, he's in his 50s, he's divorced, has older children, actually living in the States. And he said to me, he's like, my number one requirement, he's not even looking at age, nationality, height, that doesn't mean anything to him. Because he's already been through a divorce and he already has his children, they're older now, going off to university. He said, I am seeking a partner who can be my emotional, like, equal in a sense, like somebody who has done the work on themselves, has done trauma work, is what he was specifically speaking about, but who can meet him emotionally and energetically so that they can both live a fulfilled life together with emotional, like, basically, like, protection of one another, but then open communication. And I found that quite interesting. And I hear it more and more and more nowadays that our clients are coming to us with basically seeking a partner who has done emotional work on themselves to heal their traumas. And of course, nobody's perfect. You can't expect perfection from somebody, but somebody who has done the work and is looking to evolve and be a better human being emotionally.
That's very interesting because presumably all else being equal, if you've been through some kind of trauma, I don't know, let's say you've been severely...
Everybody's been through trauma,
No. There's trauma and there's trauma. I mean, let's say you've been like, I don't know, sexually abused or physically abused as a child.
Right. Yeah.
And obviously, that if you find someone else that gets you, that's been through the same thing and that understands what you're going through, which will be quite rare, then that's going to be a unique and extremely strong bond. And or anything like that, which will then be a basis of other aspects of the relationship. So, but it, I would then, I'd still think though, what would be, there'd be some sexual difference in what was wanted, because again, it would be reducible down to the man wanting youth, beauty, things like that, the woman wanting age as a proxy for resources, or simply resources and success. But there'd be this slight movement towards different up Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if you want. Of emotions sits, emotional bonding and all that stuff sits at the top of it. But what would be the differences between what kind of emotional bonding a man and a woman therefore would want?
What I see in the successful relationships that we've created as matchmakers, and even ones that I see amongst my friends and my community, is that men are really looking for women who inspire them, right? Who inspire them. And women are looking for men that admire them. So it's like you want to have this dynamic too, where also then it's built on this foundation of mutual respect. And I see this so often, I hear this so many times in client calls where people are openly speaking about the emotional needs that they seek in a partner because they have done their own work, right? And they have evaluated what they need. And then, of course, we have clients who come to us who are on the other side of the spectrum and just give us a list of needs to be 5'10", blonde, blue-eyed. Yes, we have that as well. But I am seeing a larger trend towards the speaking about the emotional needs that both men and women need.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, because I love it.
If you look at the research on like narcissism, grandiose narcissism, which is basically a more male trait, and borderline personality disorder, which is more a female trait, though it has aspects of narcissism involved with it. So they're emotionally dysregulated, fear abandonment, this sort of thing. Of course, the narcissistic thing is to want to be admired. And the BPD girl will idealize, will engage in this process where she love bombs and idolizes the man, so it makes him feel like that he's amazing. But she will be inspired by him. He will come across to her as this incredible. What's the word? I read in an article like teddy bear human, almost like this perfect person that therefore inspires her. And so you're almost reducing it down to that. And there is evidence that we are increasing because, for various reasons to do with being brought up to be pampered and shit, nonsense like this, in these kinds of traits. I mean, isn't that what you're reflecting? That is reflecting basically maladaptive characteristics.
Well, yeah, it's quite interesting, right? When I talk about men who want to feel inspired, right? But what also goes hand in hand with that
is... Hang on, who wants to feel inspired, the women or the men?
The men want to be inspired.
I would have thought it was the way around. The women like to be admired, and the men like to be inspired.
Exactly. Yeah. So the way you have to think about it, right? And it's quite interesting because especially with the clients that come to us who have already built an empire, right? I speak to so many different women, so many people who are dating now in the world, and they're seeking a partner who has already built their empire. And I talk a lot about how I think it's actually great if you can meet somebody who's maybe in their building phase and be that person that inspires them to reach that top of the mountain. Because you have to think about that bond that you're going to build with that person, because you are the person who is helping them build their empire. And then you ultimately become less disposable. Or if you meet a man who's already at his top or his peak, you're more easily replaceable. I know that sounds terrible. And what I was mentioning earlier is that women are seeking, I mean, besides admiration, right? Like a woman wants to feel beautiful, wants to feel sexy, wants to feel loved by their partner.
Right, I see, yes.
And then there's also like that layer of security that women are seeking too. So men want respect and inspiration, and women want security and admiration.
Okay, well then the security thing is still reducible to basic evolutionary dynamics, and the worship, the physical worship, is because women are the ones that make themselves more attractive, is still reducible to those dynamics. I'm just trying to think about the psychology of a person that wants to be inspired. And it's that's interesting, and I wonder if that is a reflection of the, in a way, that the admiration of the women thing isn't, of the narrow nature of the kind of men that you're involved with, because those men, people that are very, very successful like that, they tend to be high in openness, risk taking, and that would be consistent with wanting to be inspired.
Yeah, exactly. And I see that the best relationships have those dynamics where the man feels like inspired by their partner, where they literally think like, my purpose on this planet is my partner and our family. Like that's like their driving force. And I see that dynamic in very successful relationships, healthy, happy relationships. And then with the flip side, right? The man is admiring his woman and that's what she wants. Like, women, we want to feel love. We want to feel connected to you. And when you have that dynamic, I see lots of success in those.
That's very interesting. This is fascinating because you think about creative. There's a degree to which I suppose you could say that these kind of very, very successful people are, they're creative. They've innovated something. They've done something amazing, right? And if you think about very creative men, people like poets, The person that they'll have a relationship with is their muse.
Yes, exactly.
The inspires them, and 100%. They are socially signaling to the muse their creativity, their ability, therefore, to kind of get money and resources.
Yep, 100%. You have to think about that, right? And I do meet, obviously, we have so many relationships that we have created, but also in the communities and circles that I'm in, like these men who literally put their wives on a pedestal because they were the ones that maybe were like the spark that helped them build that empire or keep building, right? And they're like, wow, my wife is my purpose. Our family is my purpose.
They're their mourgeons. They're their muses.
Yes, exactly.
Oh no, that's very interesting because if money and resources are basically sorted out, then it's an issue of, as you say, feeling loved and admired, the woman, because you don't want him to abandon you, and it's a question of him of her. That's very interesting. Okay, good. That's interesting, but it reflects, though, and that's, I suppose, that's the nature of your database. You have a small number of men and a massive number of women, so the women are representative of women. The men are not representative of men; they are a specific type.
So you know what's interesting is historically, I used to only work with male clients because those were the clients that would reach out. And just this year, I've actually worked with a couple of female clients. And I don't know if it's because maybe I've become more warm, more empathetic. I'm not sure. But I have actually working with incredible female clients who are just like, they're ready to date and to find their partner, because our clients go through a 4-step vetting process in order to become a client. This is why we have a nearly 100% success rate, because we only work with clients that we know that we can find success with. So So historically our database is, yes, more skewed. We have way more women, but we also don't just stick to our database. Every client comes in with a specific search, and then we use our networks in order to help them find their partner. So you don't necessarily have to be in the database to be matched with one of our clients. Sometimes we search for you, or you might be in somebody else's network that we can then help set you two up.
A component of being attracted to somebody is not merely the psychological traits that you've mentioned, and it's not merely objective standards of beauty and things like that either. It's genetic similarity. And there's quite a lot of studies on this that, for example, a husband and wife are more genetically similar to each other than two random members of the same population. And they're not only that, but they are genetically similar on the more genetically similar. I mean, so for example, I read some, what is it? You're part Filipino and part Puerto Rican or something.
Oh gosh, I'm Puerto Rican, Filipino, and Turkish, but I'm very American.
But one of the things that you find in the data on interracial couples is that they, it's almost like they overcompensate for physical genetic dissimilarity by very strongly selecting for mental similarity. So they're more similar on intelligence, which is strongly genetic, than our white couples, for example.
So did you know that? Yeah. And also, sorry to cut you off, but just a stat here. The divorce rate between Black women and white men is the lowest out of any interracial or, say, hetero couple. Isn't that crazy?
No, that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, it's like, it's a really interesting fact that you're just like, wow, okay, that makes sense.
Well, not really. No, because obviously, how can I put this nicely? Black women are more masculinized. They're less attractive than, let's say, Northeast Asian or white women. And if the white man has selected for a black woman, he probably hasn't done it because she's pretty. He's done it because they're mentally very similar. And so for that reason alone, I would expect them to stay together.
Okay, we can have different views on that one, but okay.
I've actually written about that exact thing in a book.
Really? I'm going to read that.
I'm not surprised by that at all. Whereas the divorce rate the other way round is very high. And because you're dealing with two genetically dissimilar people and they're basically selecting for youth and beauty and things like that.
And physical, yeah.
The physical stuff. And so so those people are going to be probably high in psychopathic traits, and therefore they're going to divorce. But anyway, the point is that there is a genetic component to attraction within race, whatever. To what extent would you take that into account in matchmaking?
Now, before we continue, I'd like to do something rather exciting. I know that you Generation Z people, you want to have read all of the based books, you want to have imbibed all of the most radical and important scientific knowledge, but you don't particularly like reading very much. So what if there was an app that would take those books, summarise them for you, and then read them back to you in less than 25 minutes? Well, fortunately, such an app exists, and that app is called Legiant.com. They have, for example, my book, The Past is a Future Country, The Coming Conservative Demographic Revolution, by myself and my friend Ollie Rayner Hills, in which we look at the way that there is clearly going to be a shift based on breeding patterns among the more intelligent back towards us being right-wing, and the return, therefore, of a kind of genetically right-wing society, a kind of neo-Byzantium. And here it is, The Past of the Future Country. And so you don't even have to read the book if you don't want to. This can inject it straight from the phone into your brain box. And if you sign up today with the code TJH, then of course you can get a 10% discount. So Legiant.com, sign up now. All the base knowledge from your phone, direct to your brain.
You know, when we work with men are very visual creatures, and a man will not go on a first date with a woman if he doesn't find her physically attractive. Some of our clients come to us with very specific, like, I only want to date women who are age 32 to 36, Western European, blonde, blue-eyed, would convert to Islam. So like extremely specific, let's say, requirements. Where then we have men who come to us who don't have any restrictions on nationality, religion, height, blonde, blue-eyed, or dark hair, dark eyes. It's more just about, it's very personal thing is attraction. I mean, for the most part, we know that certain types like look a certain way, but each client that we have has a different level of attraction to body type, let's say skin complexion, nationality, or they have specifics on religion.
So I did a paper on this some years ago. So what's more attractive? What's more important to you? Face, body, breasts, bottom, whatever. What's the thing you're into as a man? And I found there are psychological differences around what's more important to them. In general, are your clients more face or body kind of people?
You know what I'll tell you, which I find very interesting. I think as a woman, as like a girl growing up, you think like, oh, that guy's like boobs. Most men like butt. But it has to do with like the waist to hip ratio, right? Mm. And like what they find attractive, and especially one that is linked to fertility, right? So a lot of our clients will talk more about a woman who is more shapely, or some people have a very, like, they want that stick figure model type. What our clients are seeking is so specific to each of them. But yeah, we get more butt guys than boob guys, if that's what you're asking.
What about face?
Yeah, guys really look at that, because that doesn't change much, right? Because body is going to fluctuate, whether, like, especially when you're starting a family and, you know, as you age, it's really, I mean, physically, that's what they're looking at. But there's so many different layers when it comes to emotional and connection and intelligence.
Okay. So do any of them, how can I put this? One issue that I, did you see a film recently, perhaps, called Companion?
No, I haven't. What is it?
It's quite good. It's about a sex robot, very realistic sex robot, in a world where it's not uncommon to have very realistic sex robots, that aware that she's a sex robot. And so it's kind of like, I don't know if you saw Ex Machina, where she's a robot, but you know that one. But so it's kind of like that, but taken to a new and interesting level. Now, one of the things that they program into these sex robots is a memory, the amazing memory where, you know, let's say, for example, they were both at the fairground and they happened to look across at each other and they found this incredible connection immediately. Mm. And then they get into a relationship, and that is programmed into the sex robot so that it has that memory. And that it's a very visceral memory. And when you meet a person normally, i.e. outside of this, you know, outside of Indian matchmaking, which I've got to do to make the times of India, or your system, there is something like that. There's a randomness to it. And even though if you think about it logically, it's probably nonsense, but there's a randomness to it. And then you can sort of say, oh, imagine if that random event hadn't happened. Oh, the stars were aligned. Oh, you know, oh, this was planned out. Oh, we're in love. Oh, it's, you know, we're characters in a novel and someone's writing our story for us, you know, and it's all like something transcendent.
Fairy dust.
And religious. And isn't that, you know, Cupid's arrow hit? And isn't that amazing? And isn't it good for there to be something of the transcendent about something important as the person who you're going to fall in love with and have children with and whatever? And doesn't matchmaking and apps and all this, doesn't that kind of just really make it something mechanical and not like that at all?
You know what's interesting? So we actually, last year, we had matched a celebrity couple. Celebrity on the sense of, like, one is extremely high profile in the political world and the other one is more of a celebrity.
Are you ready for the future of the West?